this. So to that, let me first introduce my company. I represent what is mentioned here as the Military College of Telecommunication Engineering. It is a similar institute of what you people are here, INS Valsura. Possibly a shade little bigger or smaller. You can see by size it is smaller, but by numbers it's a little bigger. You have got an area of approximately 600 square yards, acres. We are less than half of what you are in times of area, but the numbers are a little high. So we train all ranks in telecommunication and IT. We train them for diploma courses, we train them for graduate courses, we train them for postgraduate courses. We also have a sizable chunk of trainees coming from friendly foreign countries, and some trainees coming from sister services, some trainees coming from paramilitary forces, and so on and so forth. What I do is I look after the technological infusion part of MCT. I am the single point of contact for any outreach programs, any MOUs, any emerging technologies which we need to look at, any projects which we need to work on this. So I interact with my friends at the ADB and ARTRAC over here. So this is as far as what I do and where I come from. Over the next 20 minutes or so, I will be a devil's advocate. We have been not talking about AI, and AI is the buzzword. AI does anything and everything. I will do an easier job. You know, the easiest job in the defense forces is to find mistakes. So I'll find a few pitfalls. I'll just poke at certain critical areas of AI. Something happened. Critical areas of AI where we should be a little more careful in the way we are doing it. It does not in any way demean undermine proponents of AI. In fact, I myself am a very great proponent of AI. But these are some pinpricks which we must be a little bit more careful. With that, let me go ahead. So as I said, AI is awesome. AI is there anywhere and everywhere. It is there in any branch, independent AI. You see this slide, I will not read the entire contents of this. It is there everywhere, every arm, every service, every department, every branch, every ministry is into AI. And if somebody is not, then he's lost the bus. So it has come into, it has penetrated in all our fields, all governments, all corporates are investing heavily into AI. And it is a fashion now to prefix or suffix these two letters, A and I, to any projects. If you don't do that, your projects will not gain the sufficient weight to be processed faster. And if you do that, most of your projects will get through in a jiffy. So this is where it is as compared to what AI is. As we know, we have narrow AI where we are there. It essentially does things which are repetitive, which are dull, which are dangerous in a better way or in a little more faster way as compared to human beings. We have the AI, general AI and the super AI. But what next? Will we come to a situation where we have human-shaped robots? And will we come to a situation where this entire robot will wipe out humanity? It is a very, very far-fetched thing. Will it really happen? We don't know. Is this the threat? But this might be the threat, but there is a bigger threat of explainability of AI. And my thunder has been stolen by the previous speakers who have spoken. Dr. Garg has spoken about explainability. In fact, this slide also happens to be in Dr. Garg's presentation. So when we talk about explainability, does anybody, any proponent of AI really understand what happens inside an AI algorithm? You know, Manikshah, who was one of our favorite generals, he said that during war, if somebody says that I am not afraid, he is either lying or he's a Gorkha. So similarly, I take the same analogy. If any proponent of AI says that in a convolutional neural network, which is this diagram which I have shown on the left, when it is actually functioning, when it's actually doing something, if anybody can tell what is actually happening inside this CNN, you might have done PhDs, you might have done research papers, you might have done whatever. He's either lying or he is, you know, hats off to him. So this is the situation of AI. So it is very, very difficult to understand actually what is happening in this AI. And it is very, very important to also understand what is happening to it. So we are stuck in a little catch-22 situation to see how to get into this experiment. And as I said, AI is rapidly entering into our lives. We have autonomous vehicles, we have autonomous pilots, we have all possible professions which are going to get, which are on the threat of extinction. The US recently said that our last fighter pilot has been born. What does that mean? That there are no more fighter pilots who will be born, who will get trained to fly fighters. It will all be remotely controlled. It will all be AI based. We have driverless cars. The drivers will be out of job. We have AI algorithms doing the job of doctors, lawyers. And today I learned a very creative AI. So it will put artists out of job. Actors to have deep fakes. We all have seen videos of Zelensky, who himself is an actor, of giving a statement which he has never given on social media platforms. So we have all these things, but when we use AI for critical applications like medical diagnostics, where it can make a difference between life and death, where we use autonomous weapons, autonomous vehicles, where we use AI for simple applications like granting of visa, selection of a job, selection whether you should get a loan or should not get a loan based on your credit history, selection whether you should get a bail or not get a bail. So when we use AI in all these critical things, there could be places where you might go wrong. I'm not saying that you will go wrong, but you might go wrong. And it is often said to err is human. And a system which is made by human will definitely err. This is the thread which I'm talking about. So AI is a system which is made by humans, and humans are bound to commit mistakes. So if a human can commit mistake, a system made by humans in wherever, it could be in data, it could be in algorithm, it could be in hardware, it could be in whatever, you will have mistakes coming in. And these mistakes, the cost of these mistakes could be very high in certain cases. I'll give you some examples. Let's start with, we've been talking about Google. I don't call it as Google, I call it as Google God. Because, this is the thing which can answer anything and everything. Your children will ask you, what is this? The first thing you say is, refer Google. Now, when you type in something to search in Google, you get very good replies. Everybody satisfied with whatever replies you get on Google. Generally, mostly people are satisfied. Yes. Okay. So I will give you why there is a problem in this. If you ask Google for an isolated fact, if you ask Google, what is the speed of light? If you ask Google, what is the value of pi, 22 by 7? It will give you an answer which nobody else can give you better than it. Yes or no? Yes. But if you ask the same Google an answer which is bound by not one isolated fact, but a multiple of isolated facts, with little bit of perceptions, with little bit of history, with little bit of previous knowledge coming in, will it give you the same answer? I'll give you an example. If you ask Google, why did Russia attack Ukraine? Will this answer actually meet your requirements? If you ask Google, why did Russia withdraw from, recently they just withdrew from South Ukraine, Kherson, why did it withdraw? Will you get a satisfactory answer? You will get a biased answer, and that answer is biased towards NATO. Yes or no? Anybody is disagreeing with me? Yes. So when Google, which is considered to be the top AI, you name AI and Google God, which I have given him the darja of God also, can be biased. Why not other AI systems, which are small parts of this, are also biased? Let's go ahead. Next slide, if somebody can. Okay, thank you. I think Simran's presence makes a difference here. Okay, internet. You see, only 20% of the entire world population speaks English. The nearest neighbors of England, France, they don't speak English. Germans don't speak English. Forget France and Germany, Ireland, which is a part of Great Britain, Northern Ireland, or the Southern Ireland. They don't speak English. But your entire internet is, 50% of internet is English. 80% of all content on the internet is just in 10 languages. India itself has got about 124 languages. We have around 36 languages printed on a note on the on our currency. So why is this bias here? Why is this bias towards English? For example, I just did this prior to coming here. I gave four, she's a doctor, she's an artist, a nurse, priest, soldier, driver. And I gave it to a Google Translate, which is the largest AI experiment done till date. And I asked it to translate from English to Hindi, and it gave me a gender neutral translation. All this she vanished. Now this she's a doctor became Vaek Doctor Hai. Now this Vaek Doctor Hai could be male, female, or even the third category. Very difficult. Okay, now I didn't stop here. I gave it back to Google. I gave the same things which Google gave me to Google and told Google to translate it back to English. And I got some genders. She's a doctor became he's a doctor. She's an artist remained as an artist, a nurse remained as a nurse, but the priest, soldier and driver again changed gender to become he from she. Okay. Isn't this biased? This I have done as late as 2 days ago, just before leaving mom. So this Google Translate, the largest AI project, is biased towards a particular gender. Not intentionally. I'm not blaming Google for that. I'm just telling you this is a pitfall. It might not be intentional, but this is a gender bias, especially for gender neutral or gender ambiguous languages. You all have heard about this Apple card. Apple was giving out its credit cards, and the algorithm they used was by Goldman Sachs. Goldman Sachs also didn't know anything about this algorithm. They gave it to some third-party vendor who developed an algorithm to say who will get a credit card and what will be his credit limit. And it was almost humiliating to find that this algorithm gives 10 times more credit limit to males as compared to females. To the extent it became a big national issue, and this algorithm had to be junked. And it also affected the Apple CEO. In fact, Apple CEO came on Twitter and said, my wife's credit limit, who earns more than me, is 10 times lesser than me. And so this entire algorithm, nobody could explain why this is happening, because it was made by somebody, it was given by somebody, it was used by somebody for somebody else. And this was the final result of it, in which the entire algorithm was junked. This is a Nikon camera. We have this anti-blink features in most of the cameras nowadays. Okay. And we are using the same face recognition or anti-sleep, some kind of AI algorithm to ensure that you don't sleep or you don't doze off while you're driving. This AI Nikon camera failed to click because every time it tried to click, it found that somebody is blinking. And you can see all people from East India, people from East Asia. Their eyes are so small. So there are biases in very large projects of AI. These biases couldn't be intentional, but these biases have come in because it has not been trained on these people. It has been trained on Americans or possibly Europeans who have wide eyes. And here, once you try and take a photograph, it is just not clicking the photograph because it is telling somebody is blinking, I will not click. And if you use the same algorithm for your driver detection, sleep detection, your automatic AI will keep on braking the vehicle. It will not, never allow the vehicle to go ahead because it will find that this chap is always sleeping. You see, face recognition is one thing which everybody is very fond of. But of all the dominant biometrics, fingerprint, iris scan, palm, voice, face recognition is the most inaccurate because your face changes over time. Your fingerprint doesn't change over time. This, I'm not saying this, this is a study by MIT in 2019. And they also studied that none of the facial recognition algorithms by big wigs like Microsoft, Amazon, IBM were accurate more than 90%. None of them. This is an MIT study. I can give you the reference also. In fact, it said there was 34% inaccuracy among darker women as compared to fairer men. If you take the first thing, if Microsoft face recognition algorithm gives approximately 95% accuracy for lighter males, for darker females, it gave just around 70 to 65%. There is so much of bias among the entire population of the world. So how can global AI softwares like Microsoft or IBM, which are used by anybody and everybody, have biases? Arrests. US till very recently was using a software called COMPASS, which stands for Correlational Offender Management Profiling for Alternative Sanctions. This essentially is a software which takes your history and tells you whether you should be granted bail or you should not be granted bail. It found that black people committed more crimes than white because it was trained on these black people. And if you see that the risk of a black, which was this lady over here, it gave a high risk of 8 as compared to a low risk of 3 to a white male. So the chances of getting bail or chances of getting released from prison of this white male is much, much higher than the black female. For an offense which is much, much less, what has she done? 4 juvenile misdemeanors and no subsequent offenses. And look at this guy. 2 armed robberies, 1 attempted armed robbery and 1 grand theft. Still risk is low. This is a real problem. This is a real incident. And for this lady, it is a very high risk. So all these algorithms are biased. Why? Because they are created by us. US again uses a software called PredPol, which tries to predict places where there will be a higher risk or higher chances of some law and order problem. And so based on this, you send more amount of police teams to this particular area. So somebody was giving an example of planes coming back with only the tails getting hit and because of which they took a wrong decision. Here also the same thing. You send more people to a place, you will find more problems because every chap who goes, he will report a problem. And more problems, more people going there, it became a reinforcing loop. And then you found that the people were going to only these locations. And locations where white were staying were generally not frequented by police so much. Very humiliating, face recognition by Google. Anybody can guess? you see, they had to apologize publicly for recognizing a Negro couple as gorillas. How can you do that? And this is where explainability, fairness, biases come into AI algorithms. All these examples are actual examples. These are not fabricated by anybody. These are all actual examples. These are there on the net. Okay. So again, I come back to this slide, which has already been shown to you. Deep neural network, where you have an input layer and you have a series of hidden layers. And rightly so, it has been called a hidden layer because nobody actually knows what is happening in these layers. And an output layer, and finally you come to an algorithm. So inside this hidden layer, there are millions of these individual neurons doing something. Is it humanly possible to find out what is this particular neuron doing this at this particular point of time? It is not possible. It is even the coders, even the scientists, even the person who has made this algorithm will not be able to tell you exactly as to what is happening in this so many million neurons. And yesterday only somebody was saying we have 350 billion neurons in a normal AI CN convolutional neural network. So with this, I come to my first point about explainability. We have talked enough adequately about explainability as to what is explainability and why it is required. Again, McKinsey study in 2020 found out that explainability of an AI algorithm is directly proportional to its adaptability to the user. Very, very intuitive. If you know why it does what, then you are most likely to take it, rather than just taking some black box and saying it is giving me an answer and I will use it. And because of this, this point about right to explanation as a fundamental right has been enacted in many countries. UK is one example, where the GDPR, General Data Protection Regulation, states right to explanation is a fundamental right for any AI algorithm which makes automatic decision making. So more than know how, you need to know why, as to why this program is behaving in such a manner. It is okay when a program gives you good results, the results which you're expecting. But when a program, an AI algorithm gives you an unexpected result, you definitely need to know why. There are cases of accidental firing. I don't need to tell it here. We have lost a flying bird because of accidental firing. There are cases of an accidental missile launch, which I am proud that we did it, that our missile went to our adversary and landed there. Okay. So if you use AI for all these algorithms, we might go wrong. And this is all because of black box technology. I'll be a little fast here because I've got a reminder. So explainability, what we teach here or what we preach here, in AI jargons or AI pundits call it interpretability, and I call it transparency of this AI algorithm. And there is a direct relation between explainability and justification, the graph which we have seen in one of the previous presenter. So while we talk about this explainability, we have various models. We have a white box model which tells you exactly what is happening inside. And most of the AI models are black box models where it is difficult to understand the complex problem. If you see this, I have broken down this graph into a little more details. As and how your accuracy goes up, your interpretability or explainability or transparency goes down. So at one end, you have basic classification rules, linear regression, decision trees, which are very, very easy to understand. But these cannot solve major problems. At the other extreme, you've got neural networks, random forest, and so on and so forth, which are difficult to understand, but they can solve complex problems. So we need to find a via media between these two. So we have a new thing called explainable AI or the XAI, which talks about techniques, methods to explain this decision-making process to ensure that there is a greater amount of trust in this particular AI algorithm And this is more so for non-AI qualified or non-people who are not in actually into coding and scientific people of AI, but who are the users. So, and there are ways and means to benchmark accuracy. There are ways and means to benchmark fairness and bring in a human oversight to this AI algorithms. And all this is, it's not called a white box or a black box. It's called as a glass box that is totally transparent. I'll skip this. These are the various classifications of this explainable AI. I will talk about two techniques of how this explainable AI works. The first one is called as the local interpretable model agnostic explanation, or LIME to be in short. And the second one is shapely additive explanation, or SHAP to be in short. So firstly, coming on to LIME, we will take a complex AI algorithm, which is too complex. We'll make it very simple. Suppose this is an algorithm which is trying to detect whether a person is likely to have a stroke based on so many factors. We'll just take two factors because it is easier to represent two factors on the two axis, factor one or feature one and feature two. And it has got some complex algorithm. And if you plot that values on this, and if it comes into this shaded portion, he's safe. And if he's not in the shaded portion, he's likely to get a stroke. So this is an AI algorithm which works. Because it is not linear, it has got this complex system. And suppose we find out some person and he comes over here. And the doctor says that you are in a high risk category of stroke. So how does the doctor say this? And how does he ensure that this particular algorithm is actually doing what it's supposed to do? So what LIME does is it goes into a localized portion of that particular algorithm. So when you extend this portion there, you will find that it's a very simple algorithm for that particular localized portion, which is the linear algorithm. So either he is yes or he is no. So it only considers that portion, and you can break up this entire algorithm into small, small portions, which are locally of this major algorithm. So this is how LIME works. And talking about SHAP, SHAP comes from the word Shapley, who is who got a Nobel Prize on how to distribute profits, or how to distribute profits on your contribution towards a particular event. Suppose five people get together and put in some money and make some startup, and they earn a lot of profits. Now, how to distribute these profits among these five people based on their initial investment into this? So based on this, so there's a team of four people. They contribute something, they play a game, they win something. Now, how to distribute this particular payout is what Shapley had given in his paper. And this, if you just put it into the AI algorithm, we have various parameters like age, gender, BMI, sex, whatever. And we put it into a black box model and it predicts something. Now, to find out which of this particular factor affects this prediction more is given by Shapley. So that is how you can find which factor is more important than the other factor. So these two are just two examples of how you can make a particular algorithm more explainable. It doesn't stop here. There are numerous of them, but I thought I'll only explain two of them. This also is a slide which you have seen before, whether how an XAI, that is explainable AI, helps you in giving more informed decisions as compared to an unexplainable AI. I'll now skip to biases, a more interesting or a more behavioral approach towards humanity. Humans are affected right from birth, and we are biased right from birth because of so many reasons. I will not read out anything and everything. The way we are taught, the way we are brought up, the way we are studying, everything is affecting humans bias. And there are examples of this. One man's food is another man's poison. It is just a bias. Terrorist for one is a freedom fighter for another. It's again a bias. It's the way how you look at a problem. So beauty lies in the eyes of a beholder, the bias. So there are human prejudices, and it is humans who have created this monster called AI. I won't call it a monster, but this particular thing called AI. and these biases which are inside the human being will definitely creep into the AI algorithms somehow or the other, inadvertently or intentionally. So there are some examples like ecological fallacy, Simpson's paradox, which are difficult to explain as to why it happens. Ecological fallacy says that, you know, if our average is high, if I say that approximately 60% of this audience is dozing or not dozing, it doesn't mean that a small percentage of this particular audience is dozing or not dozing. So there is a fallacy when you break down this entire data set into smaller parts. These are some of the biases, consciously, unconsciously. It could be in algorithm, it could be in databases. And so there's a lot of work which has gone about to ensure that AI is responsible, AI is unbiased, AI is explainable. These are some of the initiatives worldwide. Google, AI for All, AI OpenScale, FIDR, where they all propagate explainable AI and responsible AI. India too has published a paper where it is Responsible AI for All by Niti Aayog. Some of my counter thoughts for explainable AI. Do we really need explainability for anything and everything? How many of you have taken a Disprin to avoid a headache or to take out a headache? Almost all of us. Can anybody tell me how does a Disprin work? Do you need to know how it works? How many of you have, all of you have, we have all taken our COVID injections? First dose, second dose, booster dose. Do we need to know how it works to avoid COVID? Not required. So is explainability required or not required is again a big question mark. Whether you need explainability for each and everything or you need explainability for critical things. Because explainability also comes at a cost and a time penalty for everything. Biases is a given. It will always be there. We are biased. We cannot be robots. We cannot have one line of thinking. All people sitting here will have different ways of thinking. And sometimes AI throws up unexpected results. It is this place where we need to find out why and why this particular things are there. A word of caution. Most of us are in a, including me, are in a serious competition with each other of making some AI algorithm, some program, and you know, showcasing the world. Okay, look, we have done this and we have done that. And most of our algorithms, putting my hand on my heart, are borrowed, if not stolen, from these locations. And if you take algorithms from these locations, you don't even know who has made them, what is the data set which has been trained on it, how they have made them, what is the logic behind it. And we blindly use them, we make some sort of a front end for these particular AI algorithms and start using them in the military. So we need to be a little more careful while using GitHub, my favorite, where we get a lot of algorithms. That's all I have. I am open to questions. I hope I respected this. Thank you.
Thank you, sir, for presenting your paper. You have explained the concepts of explainability, bias, and fairness with very good examples. Now, I may request the audience for questions, if any, for the presenter.
I know it is post lunch.
So, we have a question from Professor Shanawas. From IIT Bombay.
Yeah. Oh, I should be a little more careful when professors speak.
So, it is more about a perception based rather than anything. Suppose I want to understand from the military point of view, what is that explainability that you will be interested in? For example, let's say you come up with a problem and I simply use, let's say, a logistic regression and SVM, and I'm able to explain pretty well. This is how it is. But I say that accuracy is not so great, it is just 80%. But that same thing, I will create some complex neural network and say it's giving you 95% accuracy. which one you would like to prefer? What will be your criteria there? Like, any thoughts on that?
No, when you say it is giving me 95% accuracy, you have to prove your percentage.
That again, I will prove using your test data set. I may not be able to explain the way you want, the way I will be able to explain it for support vector machine. But on your data set, I will show, see, on the test data, it is still 95%. Will that satisfy it?
See, we have a wonderful system in the Army or in the armed forces where anything you make goes into rigorous amount of trials and testing, not once, but 10 times. So these trials and testings will come out with your real predictability, whether it is 95% or it is 9.5%. If it is 95%, I take it on your face value, we'll buy it. Okay, we don't need explainability if it is 95% for most of the time.
Right. So this is what, like, maybe tells well with what you said at the end.
Yeah.
As long as works,
yes,
explainability can take a backseat.
So the what example sir had given, whether bail has to be given or not. So in exceptional conditions where a person actually deserves bail, but the algorithm throws a result which says that the person does not deserve bail. So there is an exception which has come. So explainability is required in that cases to know why. So if there is a bias inbuilt in that, that can be corrected. So the reason how it is designed and explained why it has come out that like that may be required in our case more often than not. A simple facial recognition, yes, it's based on certain vectors and lighting, lot of issues are there. So 95%, that might be okay. Yeah. So there is contextual application explainability will be required in our case.
We have another question. Team check if there any question from online audience, please send me.
That's it. Okay. Sir, Commander Sai Prasad, I'm from Signal School Coaching. Sir, my question is the robotics companies, Boston Dynamics, etc., they have been able to show phenomenal achievements with their robots. As of now, they also are part of that pledge group which say we do not propagate or we will not support armed robots or armed drones. But they yes sir, so but they say that we will be giving them out in support role. Considering this factor, sir, what if it's a matter of giving the right kind of algorithm to that robot? It's just a change in that. The achievement, the physical capability is still there with that robot. Considering this, what, apart from not from the strategic point or the nation's perspective, sir, in a personal capacity, what is your opinion, sir? Will it be useful in certain factors, in certain situations, or is it not? In a minefield or in a place where you would not like to send troops or not like to send somebody and still want to neutralize the enemy, is it? What is the pros and cons of this kind of thoughts?
Yeah, this there is no set answer to this. It is based on individual perceptions. My perception could be different from what you are saying. I personally believe that the human cannot be taken out of the loop. The AI algorithms or robots or autonomous weapon systems, all of these can assist you in taking a decision. But the final decision has to be taken by a human being, especially when it comes to life. So that there is a little bit of accountability. You see, when we lost a chopper, there is an accountability. We have taken out two officers of Indian Air Force. When we fired this missile, there is an accountability. But you cannot just say that an AI system has done it and there is no accountability. So, yeah. So we have to have the human in the loop. You can use whatever systems you want to help this human in the loop, but definitely not replace this human. That is my take on
it. I would like to add on to this that in the last workshop, we had a talk of Dr. Vasundhara, and he was referring to book of noise. And in that, what he said was that decision, if it has to be taken by human also, this is the final call went to the machine, hands over the control, which the call is to be taken by the company. So he brings out that in his blog, and I will be able to share with you. That's very interesting concept that he says the decision is to be taken human, but when that call is to be handed over, remains with the machine. Yes. So it is brought it very wonderfully in this book. I'll share that with you. Thank you, sir. May I follow?